This is Hannah from Hall Beer Shop, and you're listening to Daft About Craft.
Daft About Craft is sponsored by Hall Beer Shop, based in Stourbridge in the West Midlands. You can find a huge selection of craft beers in-store and online. Check them out at hall-beer.com.
Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast.
Welcome along to episode 23 of Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast. It's December, and this is our final episode of the year, and one that we're really excited about. So, I'm Dave D.
And I'm Dave B.
And we're looking forward to bringing you all sorts of stuff. One of our usual features has been replaced this time, so we've got no hype or tripe, but it's going to be good, Dave, what we've got planned, isn't it? I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, it's been replaced for festive programming reasons, which will become clear later on, and in the style of trying to keep people listening, which hopefully they do anyway as a tease, it involves cheese. So if you like cheese, keep listening.
All sorts of cheese, yeah. And beer as well.
Of course.
Now, for those of you who spend a lot of time scrolling around your social media apps, you will have seen, no doubt, on Instagram, a lot of talk about a brand new brewery called Asvex. Well, we're delighted to have on the podcast this time an interview with Adam, the main guy from Asvex, who started out life, or is most famous for, being with Neon Raptor, and he'll be speaking to us. That's going to be a real good one to listen out for.
We do have our usual drink along in association with our sponsors Hall Beer. This is a drink along which, well, there's plenty to discuss in it, which again we will get to in due course, because I have big non-podcast related news. But it could be a drink along which is good for me on that front, not so good for me on the actual drinks, because two of the three beers are right up your street, and oh, it's interesting to see if I'm going to be all over those. We've got Tried and Tested, when Dave tells you about the 900 beers he's had in the last 3 weeks, and I tell you about the 8 I've had and try and decide which one I like the most. But of course, we start every episode with Brew to Me. So without further ado, should we get on to a new beer for each of us?
Yeah, let's do it.
Daft About Craft.
As ever, Brew to Me is a brand new brewery to both of us. Weirdly, although we are in different parts of the world where the beers come from, there is some strange connecting tissue which will sort of come out as we go along. But I'm up first, and I've had this can in the fridge for a couple of months with this exact thing in mind. It's just not fallen.
Still in date, isn't it?
Oh, it's very much in date. Don't worry. I did check the bottom of the can. It's well in date. It's by Top Out Brewing, who are based in Edinburgh. And this is a bit of a callback to a couple of months ago when I was on honeymoon up in Scotland and found this, along with plenty of other breweries, including our new friend Gareth at Apocle, in a bottle shop. So I kept hold of this, knowing that I needed to try it and give it the road test. And this is called First Ascents. And it is a Caveic IPA, 6.5%, so fairly beefy to start things off. And it's fermented, of course, with Norwegian Caveic yeast, which has definitely been popular. I don't know if it's quite as popular. It was a sort of fad for a while, wasn't it? Everyone was doing a Caveic, and it seems to have sort of died off a bit.
It was. I remember on one of the first episodes we did, we used to have a feature called Supermarket Sweep. But we did a beer there that was by North, which was a Caveic one, remember?
That's right. And I didn't like that one very much. I don't mind the Caveic beer, but I didn't like that one. But anyway, this one, I mean, there's a lot that could go wrong here, in fairness, because it's obviously Caveic, which isn't to everyone's taste. I don't mind it. It is dry hopped with serious amounts of Sabro, but Amarillo, which I do like a lot. So they say it's for a beer akin to a whole basket of ripe exotic fruits with a touch of coconut.
I see their website says that they sort of combine German and Scottish influences.
I was a bit disappointed in the sense that I just wanted to try one of those beers, but this was the one that I could find.
Right, okay.
When I read the back of the can and found that out, I was sort of like, oh, I was hoping there was another one I could sort of do instead, but this was the only top out offering I could find. So,
isn't it great, though? I was just thinking, before you open that can, I've never heard of this brewery. And I love this feature because it just does what we say, doesn't it? There's a new brewery every time, and you're just learning more and more about different breweries out there and the beers they produce.
And it's uncovered, as we've said before, some real gems.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably my favourite feature, actually. It's the one I look forward to the most, because one, I get to buy a beer, and two, you're sort of trying to find new stuff. Cool. Crikey, that is dry. That is very dry, which is fine. Kvik beers usually are quite dry, so I can't definitely get the fruit, which it promises, and then it really, really gives way to quite a dry finish. And it is a touch of coconut. It's not full-on desiccated or something, which I'd not be a fan of.
Right, that's good then. So it's been dealt with sparingly and lovingly. Mm. Hasn't just been heaped in there and hoped for the best, because that can happen with Sabro, can't it?
Yeah, definitely. I don't mind this at all. I'd definitely like to try some of their sort of German Scottish creations. This is exactly what it says it's going to be. So on that basis, I can't be disappointed with it, and I'm not. Yeah, it's nice.
Well, that's quite a ringing endorsement, Dave. Sounds like you're enjoying that and getting down it quite well.
I'm perfectly happy with this. It'll sit nicely, and I'll get through it while we start talking about your offering.
Nice way to start the podcast then. Right, yours was made in Scotland. Mine was bought in Scotland. So there's your link. By pure coincidence, there's a Scottish theme running throughout this. But my beer actually made its way to Scotland from Malmo in Sweden, from a brewery called Chad Beer, which is one of three breweries that fall under the name of Molecule Brewing in Sweden. And they're a collective which features Chad Beer, these guys, Nerd Brewing, and Elm 11 Brewing. And by pure coincidence, I bumped into these guys. This sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But it's very true. They were sitting next to me and my wife in the Wee Vault, which is Vault City's new tasting room in Haymarket in Edinburgh. We were in there. We noticed there was a lot of Nerd Brewing and Elm 11 and Chad on the menu. And it's because those guys were actually there that night. They'd been linking up with Vault City to do a collab. And then they'd gone to the Wee Vault for a few beers. So we spent all night talking to them. So I thought, well, what better thing to do than to sample one of their beers on the podcast? Now, Elm 11, they do your sours, Nerds are stouts, and Chad Beer, run by a guy called Chad, obviously. He concentrates on the paler side of things, so your IPAs and whatnot. So the one I've got here is called Specimen 1. Which is it really? I never realised it was 7.8%. Oh, this is going to be a very interesting episode. This is when you see what else we've got coming up later. So let's get into it.
And what's interesting here is of all the beers in all the world, of all of Scandinavia, I've already had that.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what you're going to think.
Where did you get it from then?
I got it from a distributor in the UK. It just happened to be on their site, and much like yourself, I was like, oh, Chad beer, not had that. I'm going to have that.
Yeah, so this was in the fridge in the Wee Vault, along with quite a few other beers. So I picked it up. So it's called Specimen 1. It has got Chinook, Amarillo, Citra, also Idaho 7, Simcoe and Mosaic. So literally all of the main hops out there that we come across time and time again. First impression is a lot of fruit up front, quite dry at the end. It's interesting, so I spoke to Chad about this beer. I said to him, look, I've got this beer. I've got it out of the fridge. I'm going to drink this on the next podcast and talk about it. And I said, what do you think of it? He was quite non-committal and open. I don't think he wanted to nail his colours to the mast in case I didn't like it. But it is nice. I like that. Because there is so many hops in there, it's hard.
It's just fruit, isn't it?
It's hard to pick out what each one is doing. But the good thing for me, because I'm not a massive fan of really bitter IPAs, is that there's no nasty bitter finish to it. It's quite well-rounded. It just sort of, that fruit just goes to dryness. It's good. I like that. And it does not taste like 7.8%.
Which is exactly what I put on my Untappd note for it.
And I hadn't
checked it in.
Interesting.
No, which you didn't know. But I would never have pegged that that's nearly 8% when I had it.
No, maybe 5 or 5.5, something nowhere near 8.
No, I thought that was quite a solid beer. I can see why Chad wasn't raving about it, because it's taken you having it to remind me what it was like. Like, it didn't stick in the memory. But when I sort of went back and had a look at the review and that, I thought, oh, yeah, I remember that. It was better than average without being standout.
Oh, yeah. That's two very good brew to me's there. Impressed with that.
Mm.
Well, we're delighted to be joined on the podcast now by Adam Henderson. Now, some of you may know him from Neon Raptor. He's now Asvex, Oh, thanks for joining us. We're very excited because we've been sort of watching your progress since you left Neon Raptor and watching every step of the way on Instagram. And your beers are finally out. It must be a very exciting time for you.
It's been a long time coming, this. Been waiting a very, very long time to get to this point with coronavirus and Brexit and so many problems, so many hurdles, so many delays. Finally got it over the line and the first wave of beers are out there. Well, Neon Raptor was my business initially. I founded it with a guy I went to university with. One thing led to another, and next thing you know, I was opening a site and starting to market in Nottingham.
And obviously, Neon Raptor sort of became a huge success in the UK scene and beyond. They're sort of viewed as one of the sort of top dogs now. And as you say, 18 months ago, you sort of decided to go it alone. We've talked to other breweries who've set up during lockdown, and that was hard enough. But I imagine taking a leap from being really, really successful to then go it alone was probably even more daunting. And then, as you say, just for good measure, we have Brexit problems and we've had coronavirus. So you couldn't have really picked a more challenging 18 months to set up, I guess.
That's right. Just for me, it felt like the right time to move away from the relationship I had with my business partners. I had a discussion with them, and the cleanest way forward for everyone was for me to leave and set up another brewery. I knew when lockdown kicked in, there was probably going to be a while before anyone really knew what was going on and how stable everything would be. And it's the first time in years that I'd been able to step back from the chaos of the day-to-day running of a brewery and really think about things and work out what I wanted to happen.
And what is it that you do want to happen with Azvex? I mean, obviously, at the end of the day, it's brewing beer for people to enjoy and sample, but what's your sort of ethos with Azvex?
I want it to be the best, and I'm sure most people also want their brewery to be the best, but not just in terms of beer, the whole thing, the customer experience, the service, the sales, the appearance, the people, everything about it. I just want it to be the best it possibly can be.
And was Liverpool always the natural choice, or did you sort of were you sort of open to going anywhere in the UK, or what was the sort of thinking behind? Obviously, you're in Nottingham and now Liverpool's.
I initially was going to stay in Nottingham, but with Brexit and coronavirus, I couldn't find the right place. I had a couple of sites fall through last minute. Everything was agreed, and then last minute, landlord changed their mind and said no. So you can probably imagine if you're a new business and you want to cut holes in the floor for drainage and holes in the roof for flue, and somebody comes along and says they want a warehouse space for selling little boxes of stuff on the internet, then you immediately get pushed to the back of the queue and someone else gets it. So that happened a couple of times, and I couldn't find what felt like the right place. I don't really know how to describe what the right place is, but you know when you see it, if it's right. And I couldn't find that. So I had to take a step back and think, why am I choosing Nottingham? And the reason basically was because that's where I lived in the area. I knew the area. I knew the people, the beer drinkers. But beyond that, there was no real ties. I'm not from Nottingham, as you can probably guess. My family's not from Nottingham. And I spoke to my wife about it, and it was an opportunity for us to basically go wherever we wanted. I started looking everywhere in the UK at that point and viewed a few sites. And the one in Liverpool felt right. Again, I don't really know how to describe that, but I saw the building. It was the right size, the right price, the right location, the right surroundings. The neighbours were all comfortable with the brewery being there. There was actually another brewery across the road, Carnival. It just felt like the right move.
So that must have been a wrench to leave Neon Raptor, the company that you founded.
Yeah, that was probably the toughest part of it all, really, because it's connected to me, sentimental value. I started it in my kitchen with the guy I went to university with, and ultimately my goal was for everything to be as good as it possibly can be, and I didn't feel like I was going to get there if I continued on working in that working relationship I had with my business partners at the time.
So now it's a clean slate, and you can do everything on your terms and get to the point that you want to get to.
Yeah, exactly. Also, there's when you start brewing as a home brewer and then cuckoo brewing and doing everything on a budget with no money and no real idea of what you're actually doing, you learn millions and millions of lessons, as you can probably imagine. Mm-hmm. So starting from a blank bit of paper with several years' experience on how to do it right this time around was
You're ahead, aren't you, almost?
Exactly. So everything that you get wrong the first time around, you can correct it the second time around, and you can probably cut years worth of pain out of the experience.
So we touched upon it was sort of an 18-month gestation to get where you are now. And you had the four beers, and we saw you did a bit of guerrilla marketing on social media. They popped up on some people's Instagram accounts. And then what struck us as a very clever idea was going with the voucher. So you pay £10, but it equates to £20 credit. That seemed quite innovative. We've seen other places do it, but not as their immediate launch. Has that sort of been well received? Have you been able to sort of hit the ground running now the beers are out in the world?
Yeah, everything about what we've done so far has actually went incredibly well, which I'm really happy about. I didn't really know how it was all going to go down. Obviously, if you're sending out a lot of free beer to people who drink very good beer, there's a high risk that it's going to go down like a lead balloon and going to find yourself in real trouble. But
you put yourself in the firing line there right from the outset then, because you know you send your beers to influencers on Instagram and you don't know what these people are going to say, do you?
Ultimately, I wanted that honest feedback. If the beer was terrible, then one, I need to know about it, because if I don't know about it, I can't do anything about it. And two, it means I'm going in the wrong direction with what people want. If the beers aren't in line with what they expect them to be, then I need to make changes.
Well, I've just cracked. Allow me to reintroduce myself, which I guess was this the first one that went in the tank?
Yeah, this was the commissioning beer. This was the very first one that went through the full cycle from grain to glass.
So it's 4% Session Pale Citra and Galaxy. It's got that lovely sort of sweet smell. And the other thing is the Galaxy doesn't take over and it's 4% and it doesn't give away to absolutely nothing.
One thing that I've been focusing on for the last few years is trying to make sessionable beer stand up against higher ABV beer, which is quite hard to do. As you say, they do come across as watery almost.
Well, we live in a time now as well when there's so many beers out there in the sort of middle spectrum pales, but they're 6%, 7%, 8%, and then there's your dippers and tippers and even bigger ones now. If you can put out a 4% beer and make it decent and make people like it, you're doing something quite special there, because not that many people can actually do that.
I myself prefer to drink the lower ABV beers nowadays. Half asleep if I have a double IPA now. So.
Yeah, tell us about it. Well, I've just opened the sour, pet hate of mine. A lot of sours aren't sour, but this is good. 7%. Wow, okay. Doesn't taste like 7. No way. I'm glad I looked a bit slow down with that. A lot of fruit in there. I think I read a couple of reviews saying that it gave way a bit at the end. It's holding up its flavour all the way through for me.
Yeah, I think I guess it's all personal opinion, and it also depends on expectation.
Yeah.
The sour category now is so wide and you can't really get across what it's supposed to be with the word sour alone.
No.
It can be pastry sours, all sorts of ABVs, all sorts of adjuncts. And as you say, a lot of them are not really sour. They're more sweet than sour. It's just a whole different range of... It's kind of like the IPA is nowadays as well. The IPA can be clear and bitter. It can be hazy and not bitter. It can be anywhere in between.
So the stouts that Neon Raptor are quite famous for, Centaur Army and all those, were they your brainchild?
Centaur Army was, yeah. And Abandoned Dragons was.
Wow. That's some back catalogue, isn't it? So are you going to go down that route with those sort of beers as well?
They're stout in the tank.
Ah, excellent. Good. That's very exciting then. And you spent all that time sort of honing those. So these stouts can be quite something, couldn't they?
Yeah, I'm happy with where they are at the minute. I was hoping to get stout out for the launch, but I wasn't happy with it. So I had to start again.
Yeah.
Just teething problems. There's been a lot of teething problems with the new kit.
I was going to ask you about the new kit, and just to go back quickly to allow me to reintroduce myself, the biggest compliment I can hopefully give you for that tastes like really expertly brewed. Really feels like you've put a lot into that one.
So with that beer, I wanted to commission everything properly and fully, the entire process from start to finish. So it had to be done properly. I couldn't cut any corners or do anything less than what you normally would do.
It definitely tastes like you haven't cut any corners, for sure. And as I was saying, with your kit now, what size are you operating on? Is it bigger than what you had before? And obviously, is it sort of a bit more custom spec now, I guess, because you know what worked and what didn't from...
Yeah, it's 25 hectolitres, which is bigger than what I'm used to. It was 20 hectolitres before. Customization-wise, it's heavily customised compared to what I'm used to. I didn't have any of the bells and whistles that it's got now. It's still relatively simple. You can't make it overly complicated if you start adding too much automation and too many gadgets here and there. But it's all designed so that the process flows from the beginning to the end very, very smoothly in terms of how I want to make the beer. So there's a lot of flexibility in there because of the range of styles. So if you want to make kettle sour beer or you want to make double-digit ABV stout, it's not the same steps involved or different steps. So it's got to be capable of doing all of those things, but nice and fluent.
And are you operating all of this just yourself at the moment, or have you taken anyone on?
There's three of us working at Asvex now. I'm the only one on the production side, although the other guys get involved as and when necessary. But between the three of us, we're doing everything.
That's a lot. That's a lot of capacity for just three people.
From what you've said, it's surely going to be hard for you to delegate tasks to other people because you want that control. You want it to be perfect in the way you've envisaged it.
Yeah, that's something I've always found hard, if I'm honest. But I have designed it so that it is easier to hand over to someone. Once I've ironed out all these teething problems and I'm happy that everything works correctly and all my SOPs are right, then I'll be able to bring other people in and let them loose, I guess. One step at a time, I guess. The first phase is get the beer out there, iron out all the small problems that you have when you've got a new setup. And then once that is in place, and I can look at where we go from there.
What sort of plans have you got with your range of beers then? Are you just going to release what you want? Or is it going to be a core range? How do you see it going?
I'm just going to see what everyone else wants, basically. Follow the trend. Whatever people are asking for, we'll do it.
Is that it for 2021, or are you going to hit the ground running in 2022? Whereabouts are you with it?
I've got one more release planned for this year. I'm hoping to have that out in a couple of weeks' time. Really just comes down to if all of the beer is ready, how much we release. But there are more beer coming.
And what about the taproom side of things? You sort of mentioned Carnival earlier, who we had on the previous podcast, funnily enough. Really nice guys. So if you're opposite them, it sounds like there's an area in Liverpool which can become a real sort of craft beer hub.
Carnival have been great neighbours. Their taproom's great. Staff's great. Their space is great. I do plan on having the tap room targeting April time for that opening. I think Carnival are excited because we'll hopefully draw more people into it. We've got other cool neighbours. There's an axe throwing venue on site. We'll do some axe throwing. There's an escape rooms.
Probably best to do the axe throwing first before.
Well, yeah, we'll have to make sure that they'll turn some people away if they've been to us first. But yeah, it's a cool little spot. It's just on the north side of the city centre.
So you've had to uproot your whole life, personal life and business, to a completely different part of the country. That must have been a bit of a wrench.
Yeah, it was tough initially. I rented a studio flat to begin with. I was just commuting to Liverpool, staying here during the week, and then going home and back to Derby, where I lived, on the weekends. Myself and my family have all fully moved to Liverpool. We've got a house here now, so my commute is less painful than the weekly two-hour journey, or more so if you're doing it on a Friday. So I think my wife's and my son are happy that they get to see me more often than they did over the summer. But yeah, it's a lot of work to get it up and running when you're not living in the same location.
Mm. I think if anyone ever wants an idea of how much work it is, they can go back and sort of read your blog, which details just how intense a process that was. If you actually want to see the sort of blood, sweat, tears version of it, I think your blog rather... it shows it really well, just how hard it can be to get going.
Blog's just the tip of the iceberg, really.
I bet.
100 different blogs and all the various steps and all the issues and problems and everything that you don't consider.
I take it from where you were to where you are now, you feel it was all completely worth it?
Yeah, I'm happy with where it is at the minute. Everything's going in the right direction. There were times over the last 18 months where I was like, how am I going to make this happen here? But you find a way, do your homework, make it happen.
We'd speak to a lot of breweries, and at some point they have to make that leap, that sort of leap into the unknown a little bit. You're on the way, aren't you?
Yeah, it's just as long as you're confident in what it is you're trying to achieve and you fully commit to it, then there's no reason why it can't be done.
So if people want to get hold of your beers, And there's four, like we said, there's four of them out now. Where have they got to go to?
Well, the Pale Ale, allow me to reintroduce myself. That's sold out, I think, and I'm not sure if the other three you can either buy from our web shop, or there's various bars and bottle shops up and down the country that have it. If your local bottle shop doesn't have it, I guess you just ask them to get it in, and we can get it to them, no problem.
Look, we wish you all the best. We're so intrigued to see how your journey progresses now, having followed you for this time. And yeah, we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Daft About Craft.
Right, it's time for Tried and Tested now on Daft About Craft, the part of the podcast where we tell you our favourite beer from the last few weeks. Dave, you can kick us off.
Strange one for me, actually, because Verdant aren't a brewery that I would seek out too much, mainly because I don't like veggie Verdant very much, which is when their beers perhaps need to rest a bit more and you get a very veggie green nose. But had no issues with this one, which was the Azaka version of Doubling Down. Doubling Down is a single hop series I've done a few cans of. I didn't purchase all of them for that sort of reason I've just mentioned, but I did go for the Azaka because I like Azaka as a hop very much, and I really wasn't disappointed. This was lovely and soft, no veggie in sight, and I got really nice hit of the fruit. It was quite classic in terms of sort of playing the hits of just being a big fruity dipper at 8%, but sometimes that's what you need, and I just really enjoyed it. Solid beer, and just a nice sort of change to see something like that from Verdant.
Well, for me, sorry about this, they get a lot of mentions, and I've already mentioned them before in Brew to Me. It's Vault City. Went to their Wee Vault tap room, tried to make our way through every beer that we hadn't had, and we came across the Blackberry Mango Coconut Dream Cake, which probably isn't a classic beer like you just mentioned, Dave, but it's one of their silly sours. It's 9%, and it just does everything you would expect it to do. The mango's there, the coconut's there, it is kind of dreamy and cake-like. It's just everything you want it to be, like a cake smoothie, if you will, with all those flavours. And I gave it 4.8 on Untappd, and my comments were just simply freaking awesome.
And now it's time for Hype or Tripe.
Right, so there is no Hype or Tripe on this episode. The reason being, we've decided, because it's our festive edition of Daft About Craft, we're going to do something a little bit festive. What do you do at Christmas? You open presents, sit under the Christmas... Well, you don't sit under the Christmas tree, but you look at your Christmas tree, put it in the corner of the room, and you eat lots of food, and you also eat lots of cheese, and drink lots of beer. So, Dave, what are we doing?
Because increasingly, it feels like, if you have cheese, when you go out, you have pork, generally, don't you? If you're in a restaurant or pub or something, they have a cheese board.
Yep.
It'll come with pork. Okay, that's fine. But there are so many beers out there now, so why can't you pair beer and cheese?
And you can.
I would say there's enough of a spectrum of... Yeah, exactly. There's enough of a spectrum of flavours. There's enough styles of beer. So what we're doing is some sort of amateur... and it is very amateur, pairing of beers and cheese, because perhaps you don't want port or a bottle of wine when you're having your cheese. You've bought all this craft beer, and why wouldn't you? And you want to enjoy it over Christmas, perhaps with some cheese. So we're going to have a stab at putting some bits and bobs together. Hopefully, it might help when you're putting together your cheese and your beer for Christmas as to where you go with it.
So what we've got three beers each. We're working our way at the spectrum, as we always do when we drink several beers together, from low to high. We're ending up with the same beer. We won't tell you what it is yet, but with different cheeses with that same beer. We've got a selection of other cheeses to go with our other beers. So we've kind of matched them up best as we think, and we're just going to see how it pans out. We're going to see if the cheese works well with the beers, if it brings out the flavours of the beers, and vice versa. So, Dave, do you want to go first? What's your number one beer here?
So my number one beer, and I'd pay attention more to the style than the brewery. Although if this works, I'll absolutely be saying, go get this beer to go with this cheese, or that, you know, the style of cheese. But I have got a sour from Carnival, who were on last episode, and it is Pash Pash, which is a passion fruit sour. And the reason I've got a sour is the first cheese that I've got is a Brie de Mer. Full disclosure, I got all of my cheeses from Aldi, because I figured One, I know Aldi and Lidl and the like do very good cheese selections. I've used them before and readily available. So we're not going too sort of fancy with the cheese. We'll stick to just going fancy with the beer. Brie de Mer is rich and full and creamy. So I'm figuring you want something to cut through it a little bit so you can keep going back to it so you don't get too full up on the creaminess. Well, I just had a massive lump of Brie de Mer, which was delicious.
What we should say here as well, so we're just eating the cheese on its own, no crackers, no biscuits. We just want the cheese hit and the beer hit together and see how they combine. This is new territory for us as well, because we're not just explaining beer here, now we're explaining cheese as well. So it's a very big, steep learning curve.
It is. Okay, I think I've got partial success here. I think the sour works because it does cut through. I don't know if passion fruit was the best choice. That bit doesn't quite work, which is, to be clear, not a reflection on the beer. It's perfectly nice sour, and I'm not a sour fan, and that is fine. It is nice. Definitely works. It cuts through. I wonder if you want a sour or maybe something like a Saison or possibly a really dry West Coast, or going back to the start of the episode, a Caviar, just anything to cut through the creaminess. I've got the right style, possibly not quite the right beer. I reckon my sour might need to be lemon and lime, something like that, really acidic.
Right. Okay. Well, this is interesting now, because my first beer is a 3% session IPA. So I'm starting right at the bottom of the spectrum. It's called Three Peaks from Northern Monk, and this has some zesty lime notes to it. And the cheese I've got is a Somerset Brie. Creamy by nature, obviously, so we're just hoping that something will, same as you were saying, will cut through that creaminess. I've gone for the IPA. I think also a Pilsner would have done the job quite nicely here, or a Weiss beer, or a Belgian triple, something like that. But hopefully this will work.
The Pilsner shout.
Citra and Strata this is, but Strata's dealt with very sparingly. It's mainly Citra in there, and that liminess comes through. So let's just get a chunk of this Somerset Brie.
We had this conversation before we did this, and all the beers. We've talked about this on previous episodes, actually, about perhaps changing habits of beer buying now that the world has sort of reopened to a degree. And I was shocked, actually. I merrily went to my fridge thinking I've got all these options of all these things I can put. And I was really surprised, actually, how little variation I had in terms of brewers. I seem to have got stuck in buying not very much. And then what I do get is when we're talking to people on episodes and we're sort of paying for our beers off them.
You get a lot of one brewery.
And I've got a selection of beers from certain breweries.
Yeah, a bit like that here as well. I can tell you that really does go well together. Somerset Brie, very creamy and buttery. Mm. Oh, my God. I think I could sit here all night and drink that.
Oh, you found a pairing straight away.
Yeah, I think
well done.
Got to say, I mean, I did a little bit of research. Not a huge amount, and I'm no great cheese connoisseur. You probably have a lot more cheese than me, Dave. I do love it, but I don't know that much about it. But for me, those two work very well.
Well, straight away then, if this works, we're already ahead because, as we said at the start of it, people would just get a cheese board and you'd get your brie and you'd get your cheddar and you get your Stilton all next to each other and just goes with port. And they do all work, but I sometimes do find you have that board and you sort of go, well, that works really well with that. And then the other bit, it's like, no, I just want to keep eating the cheese. I'm not too worried about going back to my glass of port or whatever.
Yeah, and don't forget, if you're swigging back a mouthful of port with every munch of your cheese, there's a fair bit of alcohol going down there. And you don't need to, literally a 3% session IPA there pairs beautifully with the cheese.
Oh, well, there we go then. So that was Northern Monk.
Monk, Three Peaks, Session IPA, 3%, and the cheese was Somerset Brie. That's a hit for me.
Nice.
What's your next one, Dave?
So next up, because I do love my continental cheeses, I've got an extra mature Gouda. It is ripened on traditional wooden shelves and typically matured for 10 months. I heard wooden shelves, and I thought, right, so I kind of... Rather, I don't necessarily want to cut through it because those Dutch cheeses, they're relatively strong. You can taste the rind, if that makes sense. I thought, I'll just try and marry with it, I think. So what I've gone for is Epochal's The Thick Stars, which is the porter we had on the previous episode.
Smoky.
Of which, yeah. So I'm going all of the smoke.
So you're hoping here that the woodiness you're hoping to find in the cheese pairs up with the beer, the smoky beer.
Exactly. But I remember this wasn't super, super smoky. Like, it had some smokiness, but it rounded itself off, so it didn't keep going. So I sort of hope that, as you say, the smokiness is just going to marry together. That works.
Excellent.
That absolutely works. So if you could get a smoked, either a smoked Rausch beer or sort of a porter or something, just with that hint of smokiness and not be overpowering, I think that pairs really well with a nice, strong, in this case, it's Gouda. I'd say a cheddar or applewood, the applewood smoked cheddar. I reckon that would work really well. Just sort of strong and creamy, but that bit of smokiness. And then you get a porter on top, which just has those smoky, roasty notes without being OTT.
And I think that's the key, that the beer isn't over the top smoky, because if you had, had a big smoky beer and a big hit of smoky cheese, I think it's all going to get jumbled up there, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, Rausch beer, perhaps, in hindsight, might be a step too far.
Yeah, could be a bit too on the smoky spectrum. Okay, well, this is going well, isn't it? We've got two hits so far. Now, you started...
Two out of three. What are you going for next?
Right, I'm going up the spectrum alcohol-wise with a sour. This is 8%, so quite a jump from 3 to 8. I know you've had this. It's Vocations Sunset Overdrive, a pina colada sour. So I'm expecting... Well, maybe some coconut, but mainly pineapple with pina colada. So.
I've just realised as well while we're doing this, my dog, who has been asleep throughout the record, has suddenly appeared.
I bet he has, and yeah.
And that is because he absolutely loves cheese. And he's now desperately hanging around hoping for some, aren't you?
Right, so I poured this out, this pina colada sour, and yet, sure enough, there you go. There's a lot of pineapple there. On the nose. So I was thinking, a bit like you with your smokiness of the porter and the cheese, I want a cheese that's got a bit of a tang to it and that will combine well with this intensity of the fruit with this sour. So I went for a Taleggio, which is a soft Italian cheese with a strong aroma and a bit of a fruity tang. So let's try it and see if it works.
Theory sounds good. I do like Taleggio as well, just aside from the beer, which weirdly, given it's a sour, I have actually had. You sent it down to me and I had to have it a few nights ago and I completely didn't clock that the can said 8%.
It doesn't taste like 8%, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I think that works quite well again. Not as good as my first one, but it still works well. There's a bit of a tang to that cheese, isn't there?
Yes, there is. But it is quite creamy. That was the only when you were describing what you were doing there, that was my only concern that Taleggio is quite creamy. I wondered if you pina colada or cut through it enough or whether you get a lot of cream.
This is a sort of semi-soft cheese. It's not quite as soft as the brie. I think it works quite well. Yeah, in actual fact, I think the beer on its own maybe would have been a little bit too sweet. I think the cheese does a good job there of just reining back that sweetness, dialing back the sweetness a little bit when it's balanced with the cheese. So we're on to our third pairing, and me and Dave have both gone down the barley wine route for the last one. We've both got an offering from JW Lees. I've got a 2017 barley wine, which was matured in port barrels. And Dave, you've got the 2015 version that was aged in port barrels.
Yeah, we put the order in for these from Radbeer, as much as we don't like saying there are other places available rather than Hall. But Radbeer had all of their, or a lot of their range from the past 20 years. And it felt rude not to, because I've never had one of these. You've actually had a few of them. And I've always wanted to try them. And the price of them as well, just worth mentioning, because I imagine they might have a few knocking around on the website, is ridiculous. It's incredibly cheap for a beer that is so strong and has the heritage and everything. You know, they're all about five or a pop, if not less, on for some of them.
And some of those, I think we got hold of some from the 2002 vintage. So that's knocking up for two decades old. When they turned up, they got all dust on them, which is very authentic, wasn't it?
It was great, wasn't it? We both had exactly the same idea here, that it's a barley wine. We're now, mine's 11.5%. Is yours?
Yeah, 11.5% again.
Yeah, strong now, almost as if you're having that glass of port, which we've been talking about. But why can't you have a glass of barley wine?
Absolutely. So for anybody who doesn't know much about barley wines, it's called barley wine because they're generally as strong as wine, but it's a beer and it's made with grain rather than fruit. And what you can expect here is the aroma of port, oak, rich toffee, apples, apricot. Are you getting that from the nose, Dave?
I'm getting some of those, definitely. I mean, it pours like sherry.
Yeah. Now, as a sort of disclaimer here for you, you're not a massive fan of this style, are you? So we're sort of hoping that the cheese will marry it really well and help you through it.
Yeah, I won't go to a barley wine very often. And as we sort of talked about, this was a special occasion almost because it was that bit different. Barley wines, I find a little bit one note for all that they promise these different things. I just find after a few goes on one, it's all the same. It's just strong and sweet and not a lot else going on. But I've got high hopes and a very open mind. So,
as we said, these are from JW Lee's. I came across them during the first lockdown when they did a live event with Cloudwater on Cloudwater's YouTube channel. And I got the beers to go with the event and had them. And we were just sort of blown away having tried them for the first time. I don't think I've had one since, actually. I bought a load of them and stashed them away. So this is going to be very interesting. I see how this tastes. What do you think?
This is absolutely nailed on what I thought it would be. It felt like the most sort of pairing that would work the easiest. What I paired mine with was a mature blue Stilton.
And having done a little bit of research and sort of finding cheeses that go with this style, Stilton and blue cheese is what comes up trumps. That is what's recommended. So you've hit the nail on the head there.
Oh, my goodness, it works. First and foremost, the beer is superb.
Good, isn't it?
It's like drinking sherry or port. It's so rich, so full.
I'm pleased. So this is a great example here because you've always told me I don't like barley wines. They're all one note. But maybe it's the case that you just haven't found the right one and now you have.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think I do need the cheese with this.
Maybe anybody does, you know. It's a big, heavy beer, isn't it?
Like sitting there and drinking that all night, you know, if I just cracked it on a random night for some reason, I don't know if that would quite work. But
I don't think you'd do that with a barley wine. A barley wine is probably for a special occasion at the end of the evening. So, you know, perhaps on Boxing Day, sat there in front of the fire, crack it open, and the cheese you want to go to is a nice Stilton or blue cheese. But I haven't gone down that route because I'm not a massive fan of that style of cheese. So what I've done, I've gone for some very strong and robust cheeses. I've got two here. I've got a Barber's Cheddar, which is 24-month aged, Vintage Cheddar, which is robust and full, and also one called Innkeeper's Choice, which combines cheddar combined with pickled onions and chives. So there's a lot going on there. Hopefully they'll pair up well. So let's give it a go.
I think they will. Do you remember when you were a kid, or I don't know if you still have it now, when you used to have a cheddar or something, it used to make your mouth sort of water?
Yeah,
I reckon if it does that and you pair it with your barley wine, I reckon that'll really work. I was just going to say, if the cheese can walk off the plate itself, I'm really, really happy. So, like, if I'd have got hold of some Epos, I'd have wanted to pair this barley wine with the Epos, and I think that would have worked as well. Anything that could, you know, really stinks, really, really strong, pair it with a barley wine, and I think you're onto a winner. And these JW Lee's ones seem absolutely banging.
They're very good beers. I think these are a bit of a benchmark in the barley wine field. So this cheddar here, Barber's Cheddar from Somerset, from Ditchit in Somerset, 24 months aged. It's nowhere near as pungent as the cheese that you're having, Dave, but it still works. And it depends what your taste is, you know. You've got to find cheese that you like as well, haven't you? So not everybody's going to go to the blue cheese option. But just so it works, but so does this. A really strong, mature cheddar works as well with the barley wine.
I think it just needs to be robust, doesn't it, cheese? You know, if that was with the brie or something, it just wouldn't work. It wouldn't cut it. It's either a big, big block of really extra mature cheddar or something really deep and blue, and I think you're probably onto a winner.
Can we do this on every episode?
Oh, great, isn't it?
Right, so I've just had a bit of the Innkeeper's Choice. Those pickled onions in there, they really come through.
What type of pickled onion do you like? Because I like the silver skins.
It's weird because up until fairly recently, I didn't used to like pickled onions at all. I think my tastes have changed a lot as I've got older and I can now take these more intense flavours. Yeah, I'll eat any sort of pickled onion. Even if it's pickled onion Monster Munch, I'll be there.
Oh, I mean, yeah, pickled onion Monster Munch goes without saying. They're superb.
Yeah,
I remember my I had a family member who did her own pickled onions. I don't know.
Oh,
I mean,
no.
they were strong for even by strong standards. Crikey, they were sort of turn your face inside out. They were so strong. But I do like a good pickled onion, but I do generally find I like the little silver skin ones. So would that sort of work? Because that can appear on a cheese board, can't it? So
absolutely.
Would that sort of work well?
That would work really well. I could just see that. If you've got your cheese board there and there's a few grapes there and there's a pickled onions, ignore the grapes, go to the pickled onions because that works really well.
Kudos to this barley wine, which, as you said, not a style I would ever seek out apart from a real, this just, you know, caught my eye because it was JW Lee's, which I knew had done them for many, many years. And this one, I mean, it's going down ridiculously easy considering it's 11.5%. It's a great, great beer. If there's any more left on Rad or if there's any on JW Lee's website or if they're available and you happen to see them in your local bottle shop, have a look. There's loads of varieties. There's a lot of normal sort of, you know, the 2002 vintage, 2004 for example, but then there are the ones that are aged in casks. There's a port one. I know you've got a Calvados one.
I've got Calvados as well. Yeah, looking forward to that.
So they do have them where they've put them in different casks as well. But if you see one, don't hesitate. Just buy it because really, really good beer, and obviously, as we've sort of discovered, quite versatile.
Mm. So you're going to go for more JW Lee's over Christmas?
I've got one other bottle left, and I now know that I can take it somewhere. And if there's sort of talk of cheese,
magic,
I can bring that into play as well as some port. And I love port as well, but I'd want to try that again now because I know that works.
Brilliant. Well, hopefully we've given you a helping hand there with your beers and cheeses this Christmas. Give it a whirl. Crack open the cheese board, crack open the beers and see what you can come up with. And be sure to let us know. We'll look out on our Instagram and Facebook, see what you've been saying and talk about that on the next episode.
Craft about craft.
Ah, it's one of our favourite times now on the podcast. It is time for our drink along in association with our sponsor, Hall Beer. This is where we get three beers from Hall. You've hopefully bought them and you're going to drink them with us. And we'll compare notes, see if you think the same as us. And if you haven't bought them, there is still time. They are still available at hall-beer.com. Use the code DAFTHALL and get yourself 15% off. So the beers this time. Dave, do you want to run through what we've got here? And then we'll talk about which order we're going to do them in.
We're finishing the year, it would seem, with the ball firmly in your court because we have...
Well, I've got to say, disclaimer here for myself, because you actually picked the two sours, didn't you?
I picked one sour. Let's be clear.
I think it was two.
No, it was. So as you can, so as Dave said, there's two sours, which I'll get to in a second. But first of all, we'll get to the non-sour beer, which is a Hell's Lager from Electric Bear Brewing Company called Mixtape. And then yes, two sours, one from Bang the Elephant called Balloon Juice, and the other is from Ridgeside called Fenberg. They're both quite different. We'll get into more detail in them in due course. But yes, it's a sour-laden end-of-year...
Spectacular.
Drink-along, hopefully.
Dave was kind of thinking we should start off with the Hells, which is would be my usual way of thinking. But because we've got two sours, I thought, well, let's top and tail with the sour and refresh the palate in the middle with the Hells. So we're going to start off with one of the sours. We're going to do Balloon Juice from Nottingham's Bang the Elephants. And this is a peach and black tea sour ale, 5.6%.
And apricot. Peach and apricot are not usually very easy flavours to get through in beer, I find. Peach maybe, apricot definitely not.
Find out in a minute, won't we?
Smells apricotty. I don't really smell anything else.
Yeah, definitely apricotty on the nose. Are you a tea drinker or not, Dave? I can never remember.
I do drink tea. I prefer to drink coffee. But I do drink tea quite happily. I'll probably have one if I'm cold or if I'm hungover. I can't usually face a coffee. If I'm hungover, I'll have a tea instead. But I don't taste any tea in this. I don't know about you.
Well, I've only had one mouthful. I think we should give it a little bit of time.
Ooh.
I'm just going to top the glass up.
It is sour.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, that's got to be a good thing.
It strikes me that it's almost the colour of, well, not Lucozade, not that orange, but...
It's in that bracket, isn't
yeah,
it?
Not yeah. far off. We'll drink what we usually do here. We have a little chat and talk about what we've been up to and all that sort of thing while the beers are going down. Give you, the listener, a chance to drink the beer. So we'll comment on it a bit more in a while. But what have you been up to in the last 3 weeks?
From a personal perspective, quite a lot. Those of you who've been with us right from the start will know that this podcast came together because Dave and I, as well as loving beer, share the same employer. But as of next year, we won't, because I'm moving on to pastures new. But that, don't worry, that won't stop the podcast in any shape or form.
He's leaving me.
I'm leaving.
It's too much to do this in our spare time and see me every day at work. So we're parting ways, aren't we? No, it's not because of that. You just fancy a new start, don't you?
Yeah, an opportunity's come up, which I really couldn't say no to. It had been sort of in the pipeline for a little while, and then it all came together, which I was really delighted about. So as we record this, I've only got a handful of shifts left to go. And then by the time the next podcast comes out, I'll just be between jobs.
When he says between jobs...
I'll be starting afresh at the...
No. He's not between jobs. He's taking 6 weeks off for Christmas. How fantastic is that? It's all right. Well, I'll hold the fort in your old job. I'll keep it going. You'll be all right while you're sitting there drinking your beers. While you're drinking your advent calendar.
Well, yeah.
We should just say, actually, that it's quite cool, this, because Dave was actually headhunted for his new job, and he'll play it down, but it was the case. He was sought out to this job, so I'm sure... You'll join me in wishing him the very best of luck.
Really excited about it. Really looking forward to it. And I will be sad to leave behind yourself at work, certainly. But obviously we have the podcast and everything else that goes with it. So it's not like anything will change on that front.
You should have a lot more time to go to beer festivals next year. That's what I'm thinking.
I'm very much hoping that once things settle down and I've got my feet under the table, that Saturdays around the country, that yeah, I can get back out there and go to loads of beer festivals and loads of breweries. And we do have plans, which will sort of come into focus a bit more next year once we get those up and running. We've got some very, very exciting things in the pipeline.
We won't sort of divulge too much now, but we do have some massive plans in conjunction with various other people. If it all comes off, it could be tremendous. So we're really looking forward to telling you all about that in the new year. Well, this beer, to start with, you said, oh, I don't really get the tea. It's subtle, but I think it's there, isn't it?
The longer it's going, the more tea I'm getting.
Well, it's interesting. It reminds me of you buy these soft drinks, these peach teas, don't you, and stuff. They're sweet. This is like a sour version of one of those.
I don't much care for them, and I can't really remember the last time I've had one, but is it sort of, do you mean something along the lines of, say, like a Lipton's or...
That's it, yeah.
Or other brands are available, an iced tea, one of those things.
Yeah, but with the sweet element replaced by the sourness and the bitterness of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
Where do you come down on this, then, as our sour expert?
Well, like we said, it's a sour ale, it's not a traditional sour, is it? It's a soured ale. So, yeah, I find that really refreshing, and I think... is probably the right one to start off with, because our other sour is more of a festive sour and it's going to have a lot more going on, I think. This is quite one note, but I think it does it quite well. And I think Bang the Elephant have got a pretty good reputation, actually.
Certainly be interested to see what else they've got. Like, it's not put me off them as a brewery. I've had a little bit of peach out of it. I've had a bit of tea out of it.
Yeah.
It's fine. But if that's your palate, I think you'll really like it.
Now, we're building up to the big one, that sort of festive sour. But let's reset now with a trip to the West Country to Electric Bear, who are based in Bath. And they've got a tap room as well, actually. I've never been there, but I would like to. I think I had quite a few Electric Bears in that very first lockdown in March 2020. I haven't had any for a while, so this will be interesting to see how it pans out. Now, this is a Hell's. It's not going to be very strong. It's 4.6% traditional style Hell's. Light in colour, lots of little bubbles there on the surface.
Also worth noting that this is gluten-free.
Talking of which, I should say, I've mentioned this to you, Dave, but not to our listeners. For somebody who often bangs on about lactose, although I haven't done it so much recently, I should say I've actually got a lactose intolerance. Not great when you're drinking big, heavy stouts with shed loads of lactose in them, but Sam from Copper Beach put me onto these little tablets you can take, which balance out all that lactose. If you just pop one of these before you have anything with lactose, it stops the negative side effects, shall we say, of lactose intolerance, and they're magic. I pop them left, right and centre now whenever I have a big stout or a sour with lactose in it. They're wonderful things.
No, I'd never was aware anything like that was available either. I mean, I don't suffer. Luckily,
I thought you just had to suffer in silence. Mm. Apparently not.
Well, if the reactions are anything like what lactose reactions are, it's probably not in silence, is it?
I think my family are pleased about those tablets anyway. What do you make of this? Because this is more in your wheelhouse, Dave, isn't it?
It is. And I hope I haven't tricked myself, but because I said it was gluten-free, when I started tasting it, it is missing just a little something. Mm. And I think it could be that which binds it all together almost. It's that sort of bready...
It's a bit like when you have gluten-free cake. You think, oh, it's cake, but it doesn't quite taste like cake.
There is definitely a bit missing. It is a Hell's for sure, but that bready, slightly full, and I wouldn't ever call a Hell's full particularly, but there is a certain sort of full and sweetness to it. Mm. That tone's just missing. It's crisp and clean, but it is just missing one element of a classic Hell's for me.
But I don't know whether we can mark it down for missing that when it tells you on the can that it's gluten-free, because it's just doing what it says it's going to. The warning is there, isn't it?
I don't think it probably suffers hugely for it. I just think as someone who doesn't sort of drink gluten-free or anything, either, you know, I'm not vegan or I'm all right with gluten, there's no intolerance or anything. So I'm never seeking it out. And I've probably had other gluten-free beers and not even realised it. But nice one to warm up for your Christmas session, or if you get it in your advent calendar and you've had a heavy one the day before, you can have that one and not feel too bad.
And talking of advent calendars, we're now into December, so you have your annual advent calendar, which Katie lovingly prepares for you with a tiny bit of help from me. How's it going?
Well, we're only one beer in at the time of recording, and that came from our friends at Polly's. It was Mylar, and I said to you that for me, at the moment, I think Polly's are doing the juice better than Daya, which would be sacrilegious in some parts, but Lally has got his brewing absolutely nailed on down there. I think they're the best example of it now. If you want a juice bomb, which I know is getting a little bit passe and
tiresome,
you know, people are fed up with it, but I still think if you want a good one, go get one of theirs rather than, you know, subject yourself to trying someone's you've not had or something. Definitely an argument to just go back and keep having Polly's if that's what you want.
We mentioned this when we did that experiment a few episodes ago with a steady rolling man, you know. Mm. Why do we seek out these new pails on IPAs when you've got a really excellent benchmark there? Just go to what you know. We do like to find new beers. That's the whole thing we're at here. But if you just want a nice beer, head to Polly's or Daya or whatever. Tell you what is interesting, Dave. I was looking just now on the current leading craft breweries in the UK, and I noticed that Daya had just been overtaken in the top 10 by our friends at Nothing Bound. How about that? Incredible.
Oh, wow.
I mean, obviously, they have had a lot less check-ins and stuff on Untappd. Mm. You know, a few thousand compared to Daya's tens / hundreds of thousands, but still, it's impressive. And I was learning a bit recently, apparently there are algorithms involved here in, well, the leading brewers on Untappd, and you've negotiate the algorithms to climb up the charts somewhat as well. It's a bit like Instagram and Facebook to get your messages out there. You've got to know the algorithm. For example, if we have a beer from a brewery and check it in once, we'd be far better for them to check it in again and again and again. They're not reaping the full benefit, as it were, because we're only checking it in once.
Which rather flies in the face of craft beer as a whole, because loads and loads of people are checkers. But if I've had it once before, I won't check it in again. I might if it's a different method, but it's probably unlikely.
Yeah.
Unless it's so different that I'm like, oh my, this is, you know, way different on keg or can type thing.
But for smaller breweries, it's incredibly important that we do try and check in as much as we can to help them, to, you know, so their name gets out.
Well, that's an interesting lesson then. So if we want if you want your local to succeed, or you found someone really good, drink loads of their beer and keep checking it in.
I did see somebody who I follow.
Which I think is a good life lesson all around.
It does. But the, people do take that to extreme sometimes. There's a guy who I follow on Untappd, and he's checked in now over 100 times Amstel. I think that's too much.
99 times too much, arguably.
I used to like an Amstel, but I wouldn't. I might check it in once, but not 100 times.
Just as a real tip, if we're going to go down that rabbit hole, if you have a macro lager now, and I will do from time to time, you know the situation, you go out, it'll be a restaurant or something, and you want something to go with the meal, and it's not wine, they have nothing on, and you sort of, oh, all right, I'll have an Amstel or Estrella or something like that.
Yeah.
Goodness me, they are sweet.
Because we
so sweet, yeah, as well.
I had a Peroni some time ago now, but I had it and I thought, what? This is horrible. I can't drink this. Never touched it again since. Our palates have really changed while we've been doing this podcast and we've been drinking more and more craft. Mm. Well, I think both beers so far have, you know, got various stages of thumbs up from us. So should we move on to the third one? This is the one that's got us most excited, because this is from our friends at Ridgeside, and this is cranberry and orange sour with ginger and nutmeg. So this has got a lot of the tastes of the festive season in it here.
This is why I thought of the sours. I picked this one. This was the one I thought, given the time of year, this seems a good time to embrace such flavours. And also, Ridgeside are really good. Objects in Space is still one of my favourite pails, and for the price, pretty hard to beat. Yes. Ooh, that pours. Oh, it pours a good colour.
I don't know what I expect it to be, but it took me by surprise slightly. It's very lively as well, isn't it?
Strongest beer of the trio as well, 6.8%, which I feel like that's quite high for a sour, but I'll, again, as ever, when it comes to a sour, I'll bow to you on that. High for me, anyway.
Yeah, maybe. He says, looking over there at a Neon Raptor sour that's 13%. Oh, that's interesting. Have you had a go yet?
Oh, that is a great colour.
Just talking about Christmas, and sort of you get a lot of offers in your inbox and your emails from breweries trying to sell you stuff. Did you get involved in the Black Friday stuff at all?
I didn't. I completely get why breweries want to be involved in it. It's a great time, I would say, for them to get rid of sort of some surplus stock.
Or yeah, that's the impression I got.
You've got like the mini kegs and things like that, which aren't to everyone's taste. And maybe you've got a party coming up and you want one of those. That makes sense. But I just don't really think Black Friday suits the industry, because it's there for the big, big boys who've got masses and masses of stock in whatever industry they're in to sell stuff off. That doesn't really work in what is essentially more of a cottage industry, which craft beer is. So,
and you know, you having said that, I think it's no surprise when you sort of looked at a few of these offers in depth. Like Verdant, for example, were offering free postage. Great, excellent. But when you go along to the web shop, you know, you've got to buy 6 cans of this or 6 cans of that, and I don't want 6 cans of one beer. On the face of it, it's a good offer, but I don't want that.
You know, some people do, and a good Black Friday deal, brilliant, because you're only helping the brewery as well. That's really good. It's not for me. I'd be looking for like a bottle shop or something to go, Black Friday madness, 30% off all stock. I'd spend a shed load because I'd just be thinking I'm getting an absolute bargain. But when it's just free postage or, you know, buy 6 cans, get one free or things like that, I'm not that worried about it.
Funny enough, Suds and Soda in Derby, I saw they posted just after Black Friday that they had this offer where they were selling off a lot of stock from as little as £1 upwards. And they were saying on Instagram that they shifted 8,000 cans. That seems like an extraordinary amount, doesn't it?
It does really, yeah. That, I mean, I couldn't speak on how big Suds and Soda's shop is. Don't know.
Well, he said they'd been packaging all night, and then they slept in the shop and woke up and packaged more. So maybe it was 8,000. What a huge amount.
Maybe it was them.
Anyway, what do you think about this beer? It's very dry, isn't it?
Yeah. So cranberry, orange with ginger and nutmeg. Cranberries must be there in the colour.
It is
that sort of blood orangey colour, which I guess you would get if you combine cranberry and orange. I get some orange. I maybe get some cranberry. I don't know about nutmeg. Maybe instead of nutmeg, they should have used cinnamon. Because when I saw this and we were sort of talking about what to get on, I was thinking this was going to really sort of evoke Christmas, mulled wine, those kinds of spices and smells.
You know what would go nice with this, don't you, Dave? Bit of cheese.
Oh, I do. A bit of cheese would go lovely with this, actually. I'm a little underwhelmed.
Yeah, I never like to put the boot in, but I am also feeling a little bit underwhelmed. But that doesn't matter because this is all part of the experience of drinking craft beer. You never, when you're drinking new beers all the time, which is what we like to do, you never know what's coming next, do you? On our last episode, when we had those three unbards, those blew us away. These haven't blown us away, but I think our expectations for this were very high. We were looking for a bit of a Christmas vibe, and maybe that's not coming through.
That's got to have been the idea. Juicy, zingy, refreshing sour for the season, taking winter classics and upping the ante with winter spices for a cosy, fruited sour that doesn't need the sun.
But I'd have liked it a bit more wintry and a bit more festive for me, I think.
Exactly that, and I'd perhaps also just liked it to have been a bit more fragrant as well.
I'll tell you what though, Dave, the colour of this reddish...
The colour's outstanding.
Yeah, it's a beautiful colour. I've got that. That's nailed on. It reminds me, I've got a little story here. It reminds me a little bit of Strawberry Stars from Vault City. Their insane sour, which ended up on most people's kitchen floor. It certainly did here, not once, but twice. This was the beer, based on their Strawberry Skies, that had edible stars in it.
Mm.
Whenever anybody opened the bottle, it just went bonkers and you got a load of froth and a little bit of liquid. But when I was at the Wee Vault in Edinburgh, I found out the sort of story behind this and why it did go so mad, because these stars weren't quite as Vault City thought. And once a beer had been made, it carried on, because of the stars, the beer carried on fermenting in the bottle.
Oh.
This is what it was. So of course, when you then open the bottle,
it just exploded.
Yeah.
The stars obviously causing sort of more of another chemical reaction rather than just sitting there minding
exactly
their own business.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mate, it's interesting, isn't it, when you find these little nuggets out. I'm talking of which, mentioning Vault City again, what about, we touched on earlier about Great Game, Daft About Craft Bingo, the things you know.
They were basically pitching this, if you want to make it for us.
Yeah, the things you will always hear on this podcast. So what we've got, there'll be a mention of Vault City somewhere.
Which you then have to drink for.
Yep. There'll be a mention of Copper Beach, that'll be on there somewhere.
Yes. Yeah, that's a fair one.
There'll be Dave saying, it's okay. I'm not
probably me calling back to a previous episode. I'm a devil for that.
Doesn't blow me away. There's another one.
So there's a few out there, and perhaps if you've heard a few more, you've heard all the episodes, you've picked up on some as well, which we're probably not even aware of. So if they're out there and you want to make a scorecard, and then we can all play drink along bingo as well. Like, yeah. I'm up for that.
After your Christmas lunch, you can play Daft About Craft Bingo, yeah. But as we were saying a little bit earlier, don't forget, we would be scheduled to have our next episode on Monday the 27th of December, but we figure you don't want to listen to us over Christmas when you'll be out drinking and doing all sorts of family things. So we will be back in the middle of January, around the same sort of time that Dave starts his new job.
Life changes, but the podcast hopefully won't. And hopefully we'll start with a big bang in the new year as well. So watch your space for that.
Yeah, lots of exciting plans for the podcast, for us and outside the podcast to involve you as well. Anyway, so the next episode, we're not going to have a drink along the next episode, actually, are we, Dave? We're just going to knock it on the head for the first episode in January and then bring it back at the start of February because of dry January.
As we sort of alluded to, we do have plans for how to start the year, and it might be we have a really, really big episode and that might just take the whole thing up. So watch this space.
It's all a movable feast, so keep your eye on our Instagram page and Facebook and you will find out more. Thanks very much for joining us on this episode 23 of Daft About Craft. Thanks for all your support during the last year. We wish you a very, very happy Christmas. And we'll see you in 2022. All the best from me, Dave D.
And from me, Dave B.
Daft About Craft. You've been listening to Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast, sponsored by Hall Beer Shop in Stourbridge in the West Midlands. Check them out at hall-beer.com.
Daft About Craft, the craft beer podcast.